Hi there, listeners. It's Farnoosh, and I just want to say I'm really honored that you've chosen to subscribe to So Money. I know there are a lot of podcasts out there. The fact that you're here is not lost on me. Now, if you're enjoying these episodes and you're benefiting from the advice and you want more, I've actually created something really special for us. It's called the So Money Members Club. It's an online platform where you can connect more closely with me and engage with fellow So Money fans who want to become more empowered in their financial lives. The website is SoMoneyMembers.com. And when you go there, you'll learn all the benefits, including exclusive monthly finance workshops, private group calls with me. You get your questions answered in our member community. I'm often in there weighing in, and you get instant access to all of our workshop recordings. We have a robust library that's growing. So far, we've had workshops on investing in real estate, kids and money, and how to earn more in 2024. And most of all, it's fun, positive, encouraging, all the things personal finance should be. Go to SoMoneyMembers.com, and I hope you'll join us. I'm limiting enrollment, and doors will close soon. Check out SoMoneyMembers.com. Did you know that I'm a podcast host and also a mind reader? Because I know that you want to grow your portfolio, to deal with the rising costs of inflation, to pay off your debt or your mortgage. You want to attack pretty much anything standing in the way of you and your financial freedom, right? Well, here's one solution: more knowledge. This podcast helps, I hope. And you can use Yahoo Finance, where you can get access to the news, data, and tools that you need to help reach your definition of financial freedom. For more than 25 years, Yahoo Finance has been the brand behind every great investor. They're the number one finance destination, and I know because I worked there for many years, producing a holistic look at the financial news cycle, including breaking news, original editorial perspectives, analyst ratings, customizable charts, so much more. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit the brand behind every great investor, yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com. That's yahoofinance.com. Hosting the So Money podcast for almost 10 years, I've been learning a lot about how to best serve you outside the show. I've begun to offer pop-up workshops and a So Money members club. And with each new line of business, a lot goes on behind every transaction. Stripe helps simplify and ease payments with Tap to Pay on iPhone, which helps me grow revenue and reach through accepting more in-person contactless payments when I'm out in real life promoting my programs. Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe give me the ability to scale quickly and stay flexible with quick setup and no additional hardware required. And it's not just ideal for me. From local pop-ups to global retailers, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe help businesses of all sizes accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. Whether your customers want to use their card, Apple Pay, or other digital wallet, now you can accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone. So Money episode 814, Andy Hill, founder of the blog and podcast, Marriage, Kids, and Money.
You're listening to So Money with award-winning money guru Farnoosh Torabi. Each day, get a 30-minute dose of financial inspiration from the world's top business minds, authors, influencers, and from Farnoosh herself. Looking for ways to save on gas or double your double coupons? Sorry, you're in the wrong place. Seeking profound ways to live a richer, happier life? Welcome to So Money.
You know, one thing that doesn't often get mentioned a ton on this podcast is marriage counseling. Specifically, how pursuing financial independence could actually put a couple in marriage counseling. Welcome back to So Money, everybody. I'm your host, Farnoosh Torabi. Today's guest is Andy Hill. He's the founder of the blog and the podcast, both called Marriage, Kids, and Money. And I was a guest on Andy's podcast last month, so it's a nice treat to have him on my show today. And now, to be clear, Andy is a big proponent of financial independence and retiring early. Over the past 8 years, he and his wife, Nicole, have paid off $48,000 worth of debt. They paid off their home that's worth $400,000, and they've increased their net worth from zero to $750,000 in 8 years. But the journey to get to this point was not without its challenges. And because Andy's blog and podcast focuses on helping families become financially independent, he wanted to cover all topics related to marriage and kids, including how beneficial marriage counseling has been to his marriage. I appreciate Andy for coming on the show today to talk about the challenges when you're paying off debt and growing your wealth in your relationship, but also how those challenges can make your family stronger. Here's Andy Hill. Andy Hill, my friend, welcome to So Money.
I'm so glad to be here, Farnoosh. Thank you for having me.
Well, I'm just returning the favor. You had me on your podcast. And
that's
it was
what we
a blast.
Do, right?
You got me to reveal some things on that show that I don't normally say out loud. So thank you. And I'm sorry, I guess.
It must have been a quality interview then, because that's the good stuff, the juicy stuff.
Yeah, you're very good at extracting the good stuff from your guests and also sharing your own juicy tidbits about your personal life, financial life, and your family life on your blog. And I would love to share some of that with listeners today. You have a podcast and a blog, both called Marriage, Kids, and Money. And you, just to summarize, the short catch up for all of the listeners who may not be familiar with your work is that you and your wife, Nicole, over the past 8 years, you've paid off $48,000 worth of debt. You paid off your home worth $400,000. You've increased your net worth from basically negative to $750,000 in that time frame. And you believe to be on the path to retiring early, that FIRE movement that we've been hearing about a lot. First, let's start there. What does retiring early mean to you? As you consider yourself a part of that FIRE community, what does it mean to you?
I guess I would consider myself maybe the first part of that, the four letters there, maybe the FI portion of it. So financial independence. And for me, I don't ever think that I'm going to retire early. I think the goal of financial independence for me is discovering what I'm passionate about, what I want to move towards, what I want to do for the remainder of my life, you know, what really drives me. And so by working on my finances with my wife, you know, eliminating our debt, eliminating our mortgage, you know, increasing our net worth, a lot of this has been revealed to me. Like, you know, when I'm not worrying about paying off debt anymore, what do I really want to do with my life? And that's where these great conversations of financial independence start to come in the picture. I don't think I will retire early, really. I think I would maybe eventually have the opportunity to not work a 9-to-5 job for somebody else and maybe just work for myself. That's pretty exciting. But I would never really stop working. And I think that's maybe that's where a designation is for the FIRE movement. And I think a lot of people in the FIRE movement have that same mentality as well. They want to just do something that they're passionate about and move towards it and less of the things they're not passionate about. So I fall into that camp as well.
What sparks the passion for you to accomplish all of these financial wins? In 8 years, you've done a lot and there's more ahead of you. But what was the reason really for this shift?
Yeah, for me, you know, early mid-20s, late 20s, I was thinking about myself, enjoying life, and there's nothing wrong with that. But when Nicole and I got together and we found out we were having a baby, something clicked in my brain. And I've actually read about this. University of Wisconsin did some studies for expectant fathers where the mother really starts to think about, what can I do to create a warm environment at home? They can, you know, they do the nesting. They think about cuddling with their child. And the father goes to this, what can I do to protect my family? What can I do to make sure that they are protected and have the best life possible? And that happened to me immediately. Something clicked in my brain where I was like, wow, I need to stop living for myself, stop living for today, and think about, what can I do to give my daughter the best life possible? And for me, at the time, the first thing that I could think of was, man, I need to get our money situation in a better way. So that was my driving force, and has been my driving force to give my family the best life possible. And every time I find a new money goal, whether it's paying off our consumer debt or paying off our mortgage, or you know, pushing towards that like million dollar mark for our net worth, those are the things that become the numeric goals or the monetary goals. But the emotional output or the dream output of that is making sure that our kids never, you know, experience parents that are constantly at each other's throat with regard to money, or they don't have to worry about going into student debt in the future, or they don't have to worry about, you know, what their lives are going to be like with their parents. So those are the things, the emotional goals that really get me excited and have continued to push me forward.
The baby effect. It's real.
That's right. I like it. I think it is real. I mean, there's maybe I need to research some more science around it, but I know for me, it worked.
It's not a reason to have a baby to get your SHIT together,
right,
but
right.
It's a benefit of becoming a parent and realizing, oh,
I have this living, breathing, important person in my life to care for. And so my decisions actually matter. Interestingly, you know, you talked about doing all of this so that your kids wouldn't witness mom and dad having financial troubles, which for me, that is something that I witnessed growing up. And it's certainly an experience that has fed my hunger for having my own financial independence. So it kind of worked in my favor, but still it was a little damaging, a little bit. Probably should have had some therapy around it, but that's why I have a podcast. But you and your wife did end up and are still maybe in marriage therapy resulting from some of the disagreements around your journey to like, I guess, financial independence and all of that, which I want to get into. But let's talk a little bit about how you ultimately built the net worth of $750,000, starting with debt. I know that you follow Dave Ramsey's 7 baby steps. And you had a budget, obviously, with your wife, Nicole. But what was really, we would say, an integral part of your ability to transform?
Yeah, I would say, you know, you definitely hit it off on the right head there. I got kind of a little crazy about Mr. Ramsey in 2011, found his book right around that time where we found the ultrasound and we knew that we were going to be parents. That was one of the first books that I read. And the way that he wrote it, it clicked with me very well because it was a step process, the step 1 through 7 of what you can do to build wealth and protect your family. And I'm a rule follower. I like steps. So I ate that thing up like crazy. And as we were going through the process, some conversations that started to happen between my wife and I quickly realized that her and I have different views on money. You know, I am naturally a saver, or I'm naturally someone who wants to, you know, work on these goals. And she wants us to enjoy life and live for today. And there's nothing wrong with either one of those. But the way we communicated about it in the beginning didn't really help kick us off in the right spot. And I'll take the blame on that one, honestly. I read the book and I came up to her as she was coming through the door one day from work after a really busy day, and came up to her and I said, "Hey, sweetheart, I've got a plan for our family. First things first, we need to sell your car." And she looked at me after her long day at work, you know, just catching her right at the door, and just sort of like shook her head and walked right by. It's like, "What are you talking about, guy?" And for me, I'm like, what did I do wrong? You know, this book says it all. How come she doesn't know? How come she doesn't understand? You know, surely if she just reads the book, she'll get it, right? But through a lot of trial and error after that moment, I realized that I have to stop talking about the numbers or the debt structure or the monetary goals and really talk about the emotional side of things with her, because that's really where we start to connect. And that's some of the things that I learned early on in the relationship and that I'm still learning today, 8 years later, that we talk differently about money, and that's okay. It's a great thing because she helps me to be a more relaxed, fun, easygoing guy, and I help her plan for the future. So I think when we can work together and combine those superpowers, we could become a super couple.
That's excellent. And it's true. Most couples, opposites attract, and it is very true when it comes to our finances. Savers tend to attract spenders. And at first, it can be really exhilarating. To your point, you know, you can kind of live vicariously through one another. The saver finds a thrill in kind of being with somebody who likes to spend, and then the spender who might be comforted by being with a saver. But if you don't communicate it around it properly, if you don't express your emotions, understand where you're coming from, it can backfire. What are you learning specifically in marriage counseling? What are some of the action steps that your counselor has suggested to the two of you to help you communicate better around this, come closer to your goals around this?
Yeah, it's been really revealing. And in the beginning, I was a little bit hesitant to go because, you know, there's a stigma around marriage therapy where it's like, oh man, things must not be going well, so they're going to marriage therapy. You know, I quickly flipped the switch after Nicole brought it up to me, and after we went for our first session, and I thought, wow, this is incredible. A third party, thinking of it as a coach, that is helping us through our tough times, you know, or helping us communicate better. You know, if you were not, you know, not physically fit, what would you do? You'd partner with a coach, right, to help you get there. Why not do the same thing with your marriage? And that's kind of what I found as I went, you know, past the first session and I started to get excited about it. Then I'm the one booking the next session. I'm just like, okay, when are we going again, sweetheart? And she got really excited about that. And so did I. So some of the things that were revealing to us were the way that we were communicating with each other. You know, when we're really busy with our little kids and they're kind of hanging on our legs and we don't really have much time to talk with each other, this set aside hour that we go for our session is incredible for our marriage, because some of the things that we say in passing that are really important, like our plans for the weekend or our plans for our lives or our financial decisions, can be interrupted pretty quickly when you got a 6 and 4 year old hanging around your legs. And the way that we communicate, and we already knew this from the beginning, is that we speak very differently about money. So, you know, when, for example, if I talk about, hey, I think it would be great if we maxed out our 401k, to her, that sounds like, wow, he wants to take more money away from us enjoying life today. And then when I heard her say, hey, I think it would be great if we completely decorated our basement, what I heard was, wow, she really wants to take away my ability to have financial freedom. But what really was broken down in the conversations with our marriage therapist was, actually, you guys are saying the exact same thing. You're just saying it in a different fashion. And you are interpreting what your spouse is actually saying with those messages. So when Andy says he wants to save for the future, he's saying he wants to protect the family and give them an opportunity to enjoy life and not think about money and have more fun. And then when Nicole says, hey, I want to decorate the basement or do something new in this house, what she's really saying is, I want to create a warm home environment where we're having memories together and creating fun. And how could somebody say no to that? I mean, when the message was broken down that way by our financial therapist, it just helped us reveal, wow, there's no evil motivation from my spouse. There's no desire for us to not have what we want. There's actually the opposite. They want to create an environment that is family-centric and full of love. And that was a really revealing moment for me in therapy.
It sounds, too, that your main emotions around money are very different. Like, you maybe see money right now as this resource, but also it is limited. And so there are trade-offs. And so when you hear, I want to spend money on this, like, you're immediately going to the scary place of, okay, well, that means a subtraction from what we have. Whereas maybe I don't know. I'm not the psychologist here, but
something.
And then she may, I don't know. It sounds like your wife may come from a place of more of like abundance, or you might call it like just maybe lack of awareness. Maybe she's not looking at the numbers enough to know, like, okay, we really can't afford this. But emotionally, how would you characterize your big emotion around money and her big emotion around money? What is it?
Yeah, I think a lot of that also came up in the therapy too. And it's a lot of our childhood memories. And you and I got into some of the childhood memories in our conversation too. And, you know, for her, she didn't grow up with a lot of money. And she had family members that did have a lot of money. And that was something that she saw as, hey, wouldn't that be great to have a life like that? So when I talk about lack or restriction or, you know, saving more, to her, that takes away that dream of having the abundant life, the constant joy. And then for me, you know, I grew up where my parents were both working very, very, very hard, lots of hours in order to give us the life that they felt that we wanted, you know, that felt that the kids they wanted. And with that sometimes meant less memories together. So for me, my childhood motivation or my internal motivation was to work hard, yes, but also leave time and a lot of time in our lives to still be able to make those memories together, to walk to the bus stop with our daughter, to, you know, get ice cream when you want to, those types of memories. And I think when I have control of my money, I feel like I'm in control of that destiny in the future. And that's where a lot of my internal motivation comes from.
For the longest time, I dreaded buying bras. It was like shopping for jeans. Impossible. You want a bra that's sexy? You want a bra that's comfortable? You can't have both. Well, now you can, thanks to Third Love. Third Love was started to take all the frustration, the ick, the ugh, out of bra shopping. That's why they make solutions for every bra problem or problem. Their bras make it easy to bring back perkiness you haven't seen since high school. Get smoothing, you know where, and have straps that actually stay put. Designed at their headquarters in San Francisco and made with premium materials, they put every style through hours of wear testing on real women, including themselves, before it's given the stamp of boob approval. Comfort and support are guaranteed. Plus, whether you're a AA cup or an H cup, their virtual fitting room will help you find your perfect fit fast. They even invented half cups. No more feeling stuck between two cup sizes that don't fit. It's time to get your problems solved. Visit thirdlove.com and get $15 off your order with the code PODCAST15. Did you know that I'm a podcast host and also a mind reader? Because I know that you want to grow your portfolio, to deal with the rising costs of inflation, to pay off your debt or your mortgage. You want to attack pretty much anything standing in the way of you and your financial freedom, right? Well, here's one solution: more knowledge. This podcast helps, I hope. And you can use Yahoo Finance, where you can get access to the news, data, and tools that you need to help reach your definition of financial freedom. For more than 25 years, Yahoo Finance has been the brand behind every great investor. They're the number one finance destination, and I know because I worked there for many years, producing a holistic look at the financial news cycle, including breaking news, original editorial perspectives, analyst ratings, customizable charts, so much more. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit the brand behind every great investor, yahoofinance.com. The number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com. That's yahoofinance.com. Whether you need to buy or sell, or you're just obsessed with looking at homes for sale, Redfin's got you covered. Redfin updates their listings every 2 minutes so you can see new homes first, and they give you personalized recommendations based on the homes you like so you can find the home that's just right for you, whether that's a cabin, a craftsman, or a castle. With the top-rated Redfin app, you can favorite homes, share listings with others, and schedule tours, even the same day, with a local Redfin agent who can help guide you through the whole home buying process. And if you're looking to sell, Redfin agents have the experience to get you the best price possible for your home. That's because they sell twice as many homes as other agents. With a listing fee as low as 1%, Redfin's fees are half of what others often charge, which means you'll have more money to put towards what matters most to you, like your next home. In fact, last year, Redfin saved home sellers $127 million. No matter where you are in your real estate journey, Redfin can help. Download the Redfin app to get started today. The weather's getting warmer as I record. It's a nice 73 degrees on the East Coast. So finally, time to say goodbye to jackets and sweaters and, fingers crossed, hello to shorts and tees. And I need to update my wardrobe for the long haul. And, you know, I don't want to spend a fortune. So luckily, I found Quince. I'm honest. I've got a lineup of timeless pieces from Quince that keep me looking effortlessly chic year after year. I'm talking premium European linen dresses, blouses and shorts from $30, washable silk tops, timeless 14-karat gold jewelry, and tons more. Best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. I have t-shirts from Quince, pajamas from Quince. My very chic and fashionable sister-in-law, Hannah, her whole closet is Quince. And people often stop us and ask, where did you get this? Don't tell me the price. And then when I do, they're shopping on Quince.com. Get warm weather ready with Quince. Go to Quince.com/SoMoney for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's Quince.com/SoMoney to get free shipping and 365-day returns. Quince.com/SoMoney.
It is the month of Thanksgiving. This podcast is airing in November. And I wanted to ask you a question that is curious on my mind, but also the mind of our sponsor, Chase Slate. What is the piece of advice, Andy, that you're especially grateful for? Financial advice.
Oh, wow. I would say the most simplest and easiest piece of advice that I've received that has also been the most beneficial is just simply putting your numbers down in a spreadsheet or on paper, instead of guessing what your expenses are, your income is, because once you know those numbers, that's when you can start to really make some financial moves in your life that can really benefit your situation. So just that simple action of writing it down or utilizing, you know, an online system. I know you're a partner of Mint. I love Mint. And it's helped us out so much in our relationship and the communication that we've had with our financial future. So just putting it down and tracking it and also seeing, you know, how that correlates to your goals, both in marriage and your finances.
So going back a little bit to get out of the debt, the 48 grand, and also to pay off your mortgage, did you end up selling your wife's car? What did you actually end up doing to shore up the cash?
Yeah. So we ended up modifying plans accordingly, just based on, you know, a spousal reaction. So instead of, you know, selling the car, we decided, hey, you know, we're making good money together. You know, at the time, maybe we were making just a little over six figures, but we had we were spending the six figures, right? So we decided, working together, let's get together once a month and have a get together called the budget party. And this was my attempt to make budgeting sound like a lot of fun. So I put the word party at the end of it so my wife would show up. And it worked. There was a little hesitation. I had a little bit of, you know, wine and champagne and some pizza and some fun stuff like that. But she still shows up every month for the past 7 years on that one. So what we did to eliminate the $50,000 in debt that we had is that we did just that. We laid out the numbers. And we started having conversations saying, hey, we're making a little over six figures. We got about 50K in debt. What can we do to plug away and eliminate this from our lives in a short period of time, in 12 months? And we did that. We dialed back our entertainment expenses. We were expecting a child, so we weren't going to be drinking very much anyway.
Right.
We vacationed less. We had to say no to family and friends quite a bit. But we let them know, hey, we're saying no about this, but you know, we're trying to say yes to our debt freedom, and it's going to help our marriage and our relationship with our kids start off on the right foot. So within 12 months, we were able to pay off that 48K and start our lives off with our new daughter in the right way. So
wow.
That's part of the way we received our we paid off that debt.
Why was paying off the mortgage important to you?
Well, for me, I when we decided to get our second house, it was a conversation that Nicole and I had together. Again, she was interested in having a better house than the bachelor pad that she moved into with me when we got married. And with that, you know, comes more space and more square footage, but also a gigantic mortgage. And for me, that was one of those things that kind of made me feel stressed. You know, it made me feel like I think we're good in this smaller house. You know, if we're going to get this bigger house, that's just going to mean bigger payments. That means I'm going to have to work longer hours. That means I'm going to have to continue to be the flavor of the week at work and make this six-figure job. So that brought a lot of stress onto me. So I said, you know what? I want you to have your dreams, and I want to have mine too. So let's get this house, but let's agree together that we're going to pay it off in less than 5 years. And that's where we came together as sort of a as a couple, and we shook hands on it and said, "All right, let's do it." So that is where we started off with buying the house, and we'd agreed on that 5 years, and we kept that same process together. We met every month, and we did our best to increase our incomes at our jobs that we had at the time. We threw every extra dollar that we had at the mortgage, any bonuses I would get, things that we would sell around the house. We pretended that I only got paid 24 times a year, even though I got paid 26 times a year. We took that extra, those extra two paychecks and threw those at the mortgage. Pretty much any extra money went at it. There was a time where our second son came into the world and she went down to a full-time mom. It was a decision we made together, and that dropped us down to a single income. So our payments went down significantly, but we kept up the same process. And eventually, just under 4 years, we were able to pay off the mortgage completely. And that was last fall. So it's a valued at $400,000 right now. So we own it free and clear. We're pretty happy about it.
So I'm interested to know now, something that really stood out, what you told me was that your wife is a stay-at-home mom.
Yeah.
So what are some of the arrangements around that to make sure that she remains financially solvent and independent? Because I, for me, like as a feminist, I feel like it's really important for women to have their own financial sort of autonomy, regardless of whether they get married or stay single or whatever. I just think it's really important for them to have that always. So what's the philosophy around that in your household?
I think that's a great question and something that I'm conscious of too, because sometimes, and I know this happened in our relationship, when she went down to zero income and she was staying at home, She didn't want to feel powerless, right? You know, I'm still contributing. I'm raising the children. That is, in my opinion, my personal opinion, that is more important than the work I'm doing.
It's hard.
It's a lot harder. And gentlemen, if you're listening to this and you want to get some perspective, have your spouse, your wife go on a vacation for a week and watch the kids at home. Mm-hmm. You will get some quick perspective very quickly. And that's happened to me. And it's good. It's a good reminder for me every once in a while. But some of the things that we do to make her feel, you know, as if this is our money, as opposed to Andy just bringing in the dollars, is we create large buckets within our budget that are designated for things that bring her joy, for getting her hair done, shopping, you know, decorating the home, you know, things like that make her feel really good. And then this is our money to work on together. But then also we utilize services like Mint to help us track it together. So this autonomy, these buckets, and also just having general categories called whoops or fun or whatever, just to allow for some of that to happen, has been really important for her. And it's decreased more of our money fights than in the past. And we've actually even had some discussions about, hey, Nicole, would you rather just have a separate account that is designated for the money that you want to spend on certain things? And we've talked about that a few times, but she's happy with the way we're doing it. And she doesn't want to change. So that's something that, obviously it's very specific for every couple. Mm-hmm. There's no right way or wrong way. You know, some people like to keep it all into one account. Some people like to separate it. You got to do what's best for your marriage. And, it's a constant change for us, and we're working on it every day.
Well, I think the important thing is that it's not a done deal. It's always something that's up for discussion. And I think that's the greatest lesson, really. Cause like you said, everyone's going to be different, but just, I think if you have an understanding that it could evolve, she could wake up one day and go, nope, I need to have my own separate bucket, then that's what you do. That's wonderful. Okay. So sticking with the So Money format here, I do want to ask, what has been your biggest money mistake?
My biggest money mistake. Well, I would say, and this kind of has a lot to do with our conversation today, when I graduated from college, I thought that the smart financial thing to do is to buy a house right away. And I would say that's probably been my biggest money mistake, because what I didn't understand is that the mortgage agent's going to tell you what kind of house you can afford based on your salary, but they are really a salesperson. And that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. They're doing their job. But at the end of the day, they are there to sell mortgages and to get you in a home that you maybe could afford, right? So I got into this home and I immediately found out that I could not afford the mortgage. I definitely couldn't afford all of the bills and all the repairs that come along with it. If I wanted furniture, these are all things that aren't factored in when you're meeting with the mortgage agent, right? So I felt really burned by that. And I had bought a house sort of at the top of the market in 2004 in Detroit. And then over the next couple of years, we had a nasty, nasty crisis where home values went way down. I ended up owing way more on my mortgage than it was worth. And I was stuck. I felt stuck by owning this home, this thing that I was supposed to do, right? And I never wanted to feel like that again. And I guess that's part of the reason that I wanted to take control of the second mortgage situation in our lives and really eliminate it from our lives, because I never wanted to feel like that again. I did not like feeling powerless and stuck. You know, there were times where I had a job opportunity to move to Chicago and I just couldn't take it because I was, I mean, $80,000 in the hole on my home, $100,000 in the hole on my home, and I just couldn't walk away. So some decisions like that were made to stick with it. But yeah, I really appreciated the lesson out of it. I hated it when I was there, but now looking back, I think I learned a lot from it and then made a smarter mortgage decision the second time around.
Well, that a lot explains why you had this rejection to the mortgage, because we should mention, you know, as someone living in Detroit, that is quite the place right now to be. Although during the recession, people were fleeing from Detroit for a lot of reasons. Tell us a little bit about Detroit.
Honestly, it's insane right now, Farnoosh. Over the past 5 years, and I've grown up here. I grew up in a suburb just outside of Detroit, and you know, you just didn't go into Detroit when you were younger. It just wasn't like a, you know, happening place to be. Yes, there were a couple of restaurants and things like that. You go downtown to, you know, to experience some of the city. But over the past 5 years, it is insane. All of the sports teams are now centrally located. The basketball team, football team, baseball, and hockey, all downtown in a specific spot. There are 5-star restaurants popping up left and right. I go down there, you know, probably once a month. I go to the Detroit Lions games, and there's a new restaurant or a new building that's coming up. All of the young professionals, they want to live down there now because there's all these companies coming up. You know, LinkedIn is moving down there. Google's moved their headquarters down there. Quicken Loans, gigantic company that's downtown that is, you know, spurring a lot of growth. Ally Financial, some big companies that are encouraging a lot of young people to move down there. So the condos are popping up. People are wanting to live down there. You know, there's a long way for it to go. I still have to work on the school system for a lot of families to want to actually be down there, but it's headed in the right direction. And it's really exciting to be in Detroit nowadays.
I remember being there during the recession as I was filming a segment for Yahoo and seeing real estate listings, flyers on windows, $5,000 for a teardown house. The problem was that it was a lot of these homes were in neighborhoods where there just wasn't anything going on. There a lot of abandoned homes. There was no trash pickup. Mail wasn't going there. So, you know, I did think about it though. I was like, $5,000 for land in this country is a steal. It doesn't matter where it is. But you know, I ultimately passed. But
yeah,
it's nice to hear that things are on the up and up.
Yeah, the big problem with Detroit is it's just sheer size. I mean, I think that you can fit, from what I heard, San Francisco, Boston, and like New York City, all within the confines of Detroit itself. So the ability for it to provide city services as far and wide as it goes, that was a major part of the recession and the problem, absolutely.
Hmm. Well, let's do some So Money Fill in the Blanks. How does that sound?
Sounds great. I'm in.
All right. Don't overthink it. If I won the lottery, do you play the lottery?
I didn't, but I have in the past. I mean, this $1.6 billion one that just passed, I kind of wish I did just for fun.
Oh my God. Apparently it went just to one person who's anonymous, which is probably a good thing.
Smart move.
If I won the lottery, the first thing I would do is?
I would go on a year-long vacation with my wife and kids. Absolutely.
Nice. Yeah. Why not? All right. The one thing I spend on that makes my life easier or better is?
One thing I spend on that makes my life easier or better. Services around my home. I love getting my lawn cut. I love getting the daily tasks of taking care of my house all taken care of. So I do spend some money, but it's usually on ways to just make my life a little easier, make the day a little easier.
When I was growing up, the one thing I wish I had learned about money is...
It doesn't directly provide happiness. It's just a tool. And I wish I would have known that a little earlier, because that would help me to think more about the dreams that I have for my life as opposed to the accumulation of it.
Hmm. And I'm Andy Hill. I'm so money because...
I'm so money.
Yeah.
I'm Andy Hill. I love it. I'm Andy Hill. I'm so money because I'm okay with failing because you learn from it.
That's awesome. Andy Hill, thank you so much. And thank you really for sharing so much about the behind the scenes of how you're making it work, you and your wife. Thank you to your wife as well for letting us in on both of your journeys and wishing you all of the best.
Thank you so much, Farnoosh. I appreciate being here.
Thanks to Andy for joining us. You can learn more about him by visiting marriagekidsandmoney.com. And you can also listen to the podcast by the same name and follow him on Twitter at Andy Hill MKM. All this information is back at SoMoneyPodcast.com, the transcript, the audio. And if you'd like to maybe co-host with me the Friday episodes or leave a question for me for the Friday episodes, there also click on Ask Farnoosh and submit your question or let me know you'd like to hang out and co-host. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. And I hope your day is so money. For the longest time, I dreaded buying bras. It was like shopping for jeans. Impossible. You want a bra that's sexy? You want a bra that's comfortable? You can't have both. Well, now you can, thanks to Third Love. Third Love was started to take all the frustration, the ick, the ugh, out of bra shopping. That's why they make solutions for every bra problem or brablem. Their bras make it easy to bring back perkiness you haven't seen since high school. Get smoothing, you know where, and have straps that actually stay put. Designed at their headquarters in San Francisco and made with premium materials, they put every style through hours of wear testing on real women, including themselves, before it's given the stamp of boob approval. Comfort and support are guaranteed. Plus, whether you're a double A cup or an H cup, their virtual fitting room will help you find your perfect fit fast. They even invented half cups. No more feeling stuck between two cup sizes that don't fit. It's time to get your problems solved. Visit thirdlove.com and get $15 off your order with the code podcast15. Whether you need to buy or sell, or you're just obsessed with looking at homes for sale, Redfin's got you covered. Redfin updates their listings every 2 minutes so you can see new homes first. And they give you personalized recommendations based on the homes you like so you can find the home that's just right for you, whether that's a cabin, a craftsman, or a castle. With the top-rated Redfin app, you can favorite homes, share listings with others, and schedule tours, even the same day, with a local Redfin agent who can help guide you through the whole home buying process. And if you're looking to sell, Redfin agents have the experience to get you the best price possible for your home. That's because they sell twice as many homes as other agents. With a listing fee as low as 1%, Redfin's fees are half of what others often charge, which means you'll have more money to put towards what matters most to you, like your next home. In fact, last year, Redfin saved home sellers $127 million. No matter where you are in your real estate journey, Redfin can help. Download the Redfin app to get started today.